mother talks about in her letters. It's hard to believe they're the person I'm watching on the screen now. They're worlds apart. This Vivian is so driven, determined, and focused she's forgotten how to be human. How can such a woman be in charge of mending the human race? "Hello, ladies," she sighs, acting exhausted while slowly tilting her head to one side, as though she's trying to empathize with us cramped in here while she's still out there. "We trust you're comfortable. Well done for getting in there so quickly and without panicking. We'd never drilled for this scenario, but you coped with utter professionalism. Thank you," she says, bowing her head slowly. I look around and see many of the women nodding and smiling, finding joy in her praise. But I don't buy it. I don't think it's genuine, either her words or their reaction to them. "Now," Vivian continues, "I know you'll all be wondering what's going on, but it's for your own security that we keep certain matters classified. They do not concern you up there, as we've ensured you're safe, as is Eve. That is all that matters, and that alone must always be at the forefront of your minds. Rest assured, we are dealing with the situation and things will be back to normal soon. The intolerable problem will be eliminated promptly. Thank you for your cooperation." Vivian's face fades back into the logo as the same trio of notes rings out to let us know the message is over. We have learnt nothing of the situation downstairs. The low grumbling that follows tells me some of the mothers feel as I do, that they're frustrated at being kept in the dark and cooped up in this room. I wonder if any are worried about Bram. He's one of their own, a friend in the tower whom they've worked with regularly. They've grown to know him through Holly. I wonder if they're afraid of him and glad to be in here, or feeling betrayed, or, like me, just scared for him and what might happen if he's caught. I saw what they did to Diego when he threatened my life. So although my heart is heavy at the thought of never seeing Bram again, I'd rather he escaped unharmed. As a tear drops onto my cheek, I slide under my duvet so that the mothers can't see me. I bury myself and close my eyes, willing the thoughts and fears looping through my brain to stop. Seconds later, a hand lands on my arm, and I feel someone lean over me, then plant a kiss on my cheek. "Please don't cry, little one," Mother Kimberly's voice whispers, with a quiver. "I'm so sorry we left you, Eve. We were wrong. We're here for you. We're yours." Her cheek rests on mine for a few seconds longer. Then she leaves me on my own once more. They're scared, I realize. At least when Vivian threatens me, I know she can't do anything to me. Yes, she can take away my possessions, my food, and lock me in my room, but she said I'm a small cog. I know I'm a vital one. Without this little cog, Vivian's infrastructure would fall apart, and she knows it. The mothers, however, are in a more precarious position. I know Vivian wouldn't think twice about making an example of one. If I'm a small cog, then I can't imagine what she calls them when I'm not around. I think of my mother feeling like a failure after losing her sons, and of the many others who felt worthless because their natural ability to procreate no longer existed. Women haven't had an easy ride. Those in charge have been working so mindlessly on the rebirth, fighting to bring a new generation of women into the world, they've forgotten to look after the ones who are here. They've been enslaved to Vivian, and I'm not sure she deserves that control any longer.
Chapter 39. Bram. "It's Frost," the scarred man calls, as I hear him pull alongside us in a separate boat. From the chugging engine, I'm assuming it's another inflatable dinghy. "Open up." Frost. I make a mental note of his name. I scrunch up my face to widen the gap between my cheek and the itchy blindfold. A thick wooden door opens in what was once a glorious glass clock. Its enormous hands now hanging limp, a reminder of a time gone by. This face, which once looked down on a city, now has its chin in the water, gazing up at the new era of cloud scrapers that ignore it. "Take the pilot to the deep," Frost barks, and Fatty kicks me to my feet. I'm yet to hear his real name, but if he kicks me again, Fatty might stick. I play blind, not giving away my few millimeters of sight as I scramble out of the boat and into the clock face. The air inside is thick and stale. Still, it's nice being out of the chill. As I'm nudged forward, I sense harsh white light on the lower half of my face, the kind that gives you a headache if you're in it for too long. Peering down, I see steps that descend into dark water, which ripples with the soundtrack of drips falling from every surface. Somehow they've contained a portion of this tower, separated it from the flood so that the water level within is a few stories lower than that of the river outside. "Down," Fatty orders, and pushes me in the back. I start walking down the steps, guiding myself with the freezing metal rail beside me. It gets warmer with each step, and I come to a stop where my feet splash in the water. It's as far as I can go. "Where now?" I ask. "Quiet. You'll speak when spoken to." He leans over me, and I see his chubby, wet arm reach to the wall on my left. I tilt my head and see a switch. He flicks it, and a red light flashes on. The decaying stone steps rumble under my feet. The water around us begins to bubble. "Step back," barks Fatty, tugging at my soggy uniform, pulling me towards the wall. I twist and contort my face to see through the slit. Something is rising up through the water from below. Blue lights illuminate the deep hole in the center of the building's iron frame. As the lights approach the surface, the water hisses and splashes. A large iron sphere breaks the surface next to us and the switch on the wall flashes green. "Surface!" Fatty shouts, using a hook to secure the iron ball floating next to us. I hear the deep boom of metal knocking on metal and the screech of something turning. "Evening, Chubbs." A new voice greets Fatty from inside the now open iron submersible. Chubbs. I was pretty close. "Got an extra passenger tonight," Chubbs says as he pushes me towards the ball. "Watch your head," the voice says, and I instantly like him more than Chubbs. I duck as I lift my feet off the stone staircase and into the ball. I feel a hand around my arm guide me inside. The ball dips and lurches. "Jesus, Chubbs," the new guy says as we grab the side to steady us while Chubbs climbs into the craft. "Okay, all aboard." Door closed and locked. I hear clanks and screeches as the ball is prepared. "Clear to dive?" he asks.
"Clear,"
a crackly voice replies through some sort of onboard tannoy. The iron ball bounces up and down and bubbles knock on the curved walls around us. "I think we can take this off now," the kind voice says, and unwraps my blindfold. My eyes adjust instantly to the dim yellow light, and I can't believe what they see.
"Saunders,"
I say, recognizing his crooked nose and long face.
"Bram,"
Saunders greets me with a hug.
"I don't believe it."
"Neither do I. What the hell are you doing here? I thought you were arrested," I say, baffled as to how this ex-pilot has found his way down here.
"I was. Arrested, sentenced, imprisoned, escaped," he says proudly.
"Rescued," Chubbs says. "Well, yeah. Technically, these guys broke me out, but we certainly wouldn't have got away with it if it weren't for me. It helps having retinas registered on the door systems." He winks and taps his large nose. "So what, you're a freever now?" I ask, with a slight laugh.
Yeah, I guess I am.
"Well, once your dad decided I was a hazard to Eve, and Miss Silver put me behind bars, it kind of changed the way I saw things. I suddenly realized that Eve might not have bars, but she was locked up in that place the same as me. Once these guys got me, they showed me things I never knew, Bram.
You don't know what the EPO are, what they're doing to this place."
"To Central?" I ask.
"Central? The whole world, more like. This rabble down here, they don't look like much compared to life in that tower, but this is real. It's honest. I had to help them," Saunders explains.
"Wait, what the hell are we talking about me for? What are you, the wonderful wizard's son, doing blindfolded by this numbnuts?"
"Wait a sec, you're Dr. Isaac Wells' son,"
Chubbs asks. "Wait till Frost hears this." He rubs his fat hands together. Our descending vehicle comes to a sudden halt, and a muffled ringing from outside announces our arrival. Saved by the bell, Saunders says. You can tell me all about it later. Welcome to the deep. Someone twists the hatch open from the outside, and I feel the hot, thick air rush inside the small iron craft. I wait for Chubbs to climb out, then Saunders, and I follow. We step through the small sealed chamber into an adjoining room, then descend another flight of stairs. The walls are lined with a thick layer of rubbery fabric, spattered with drops of condensation. We fall out into a long, dark corridor, lit dimly by sparsely positioned LED torches. This way, Chubbs grunts, and trundles down the corridor. We hit a dead end, and Chubbs lifts part of the waterproof lining to reveal a door. It's old, part of the original building, and the wood is chipping away, rotting from the damp. As we step through into what appears to have been a waiting area, I hear voices in conversation from the room beyond. Good luck, Chubbs says with a cocky smirk as we step into a mighty chamber. The ceiling towers over us, and the original beams keep it in place, now lined with the same waterproof material and reinforced with steel to hold under the pressure of the water outside. The place feels like a makeshift army headquarters. Rows of tables are arranged lengthways down a narrow strip of floor in the center of the room, tiered rows of benches looking towards them. The walls are thick and sealed. Dozens of Freevers already surround the tables and fill the rows of seats, and more are pouring in from the far end of the room and above us, spilling out onto a mezzanine level. Not just men, but women too. Far more than I've seen in one place inside the EPO tower. They fall into the chamber, talking excitedly to each other, to the men. I'm instantly reminded of the mothers in the dome, except the Freever women aren't dressed in any uniform designed to disguise their femininity. There is no separation, no segregation. These are powerful women among powerful men, and the energy here is electric, contagious. I watch as one soaking wet Freever I recognize from outside the tower is greeted by a woman. They kiss and embrace as the crowd welcome the team home. Judging by the streaks of grey in her hair, she's older than he is. The women are older than most of the men. My eyes dart away from the couple to the flickering lights of the electronics wired up on the tables. Their setup is impressive, far more advanced than anyone in the EPO knows. Hollow displays project stolen, classified images of Eve into the air. Maps and blueprints of the tower line the tables, covered with scribbles and pins. We walk through a gap in the tables as the Freevers stare at me, all studying my uniform. The room is noisy, with deep voices bouncing off the high ceiling.
All right, cool it, fellas, cool it.
Frost's booming voice calms the room as he steps through the rabble to a table in the heart of the chamber. The men and women surround him.
So before we start breaking down tonight's events, I want to address the matter I'm sure you're all talking about. Our new guest.
Frost reaches a hand in my direction. Heads turn. You blindfold all your guests? I ask, projecting a confidence I'm not sure actually exists.
When they wear that uniform, we do,
Frost replies, nodding at my navy jumpsuit emblazoned with EPO mission patches.
So, let's hear some more about you. Bram, is it?
He reads my name badge.
He's Dr. Wells's son,
Chubbs blurts. There is an eerie stillness, like someone pressing pause on knife.
Is this true?
Frost asks, brushing his damp grey dreadlocks over his shoulder, his dark eyes looking into mine, trying to read me. I nod.
Well, it seems the catch of the day is turning out to be quite the trophy.
It's easier catching a fish that wants to escape the river, I reply.
Bullshit,
Chubbs says, with a slight lisp from where I kicked a couple of his teeth out earlier.
No one wants to leave that place willingly, especially not the doctor's son, not from what I've heard about you. You got it pretty cushy up there. He's got spy written all over him.
Eyes are pushing on me from every direction. I feel the suspicion, the nervousness, the hate. Beads of sweat form instantly and drip down from my forehead to my eyebrows.
Please enlighten us as to why you're escaping.
Got yourself in trouble?
Frost asks, his poker face not giving away his judgment on me yet. I've spent my whole life inside that place. The tower. It's like living life wearing a blindfold. I guess I was just ready to open my eyes, I say.
And I'm assuming your father wasn't best pleased with your awakening, Frost asks.
That's one way of putting it, I reply. Another way would be that he tried to kill me, failed, then set his security force after me. I escaped. A few minutes later I was being ripped apart by your men, and now I'm here.
It's been quite an eventful evening for you then, says Frost, combing his beard with his fingers.
The benches surrounding us are silent with apprehension as the Freevers await Frost's orders.
Do you know who we are? What we stand for? What our mission is? Frost asks, taking a seat at the head of the long table.
I nod. You want to free Eve?
The room rumbles with laughter. Frost holds up his hand and silence falls.
Yes, that is part of what we wish to achieve, but only a small part. This isn't just about freeing your precious prisoner. He gestures to the army-like battle plans around us.
It's about justice.
Justice? I ask.
Yes. Justice for Eve, justice for us, and justice for the millions of people living under the rule of the EPO and every like-minded organization on what's left of this planet. Destroying them is justice. Removing the unelected powers before their grip tightens even more on the precious little that is left of this planet while hiding behind their unwilling human shield, using her to disguise their true objective.
True objective? What true objective? I ask.
Frost gets comfortable in his seat and starts playing with a small replica of the tower in his solid, grubby fingers.
How do you become the most powerful organization on the planet? More powerful than governments, than royalty, than armies, even than God.
By controlling the most important person on the planet, Eve. They only care about Eve because she brings them unlimited power. Take Eve out of the equation and what do they have?
He topples the model onto its side.
Once we take Eve, once we destroy the EPO, we will bring back order. The first step is reclaiming Eve.
Reclaiming her? I ask.
Yes. She is the savior of humanity. It's time that humanity took her back, and with your help, we now stand the best chance we have ever had.
Chapter 40. Bram. Chubbs, my newly appointed chaperone, shows me to a room where I can rest. It's small and damp, but the moment my head touches the boarded floor, I feel a strange, alien sensation drift over me. Sleep. I'm woken by fists thudding on the temporary door.
Breakfast,
Chubb says, through a mouthful of something. I stand and put my jumpsuit back on. It's relatively dry now, but I guess nothing ever gets truly dry down here, judging by the smell of damp. I open the door and follow him down the narrow hallway. Low-watt bulbs throw a warm orange light over the walls, which are made from every kind of material you could imagine. Wood, metal, plastic, whatever they could scrape from other buildings, I guess. Every so often a hole in this inner layer reveals a shiny waterproof surface behind, with drops of water running down it. I start to wonder how deep we are, and how much water surrounds us. How many gallons are pressing in on these walls and this ceiling? The thought makes my chest tighten.
Breakfast ain't great down here. There's plenty of it, though, so eat as much as you can handle.
You look like you need a good meal, Chubb says. It's the kindest he's been to me, so I hold back the obvious reply.
Thanks.
Food's better up in Central, but too many eyes up there.
Can't get away with all this, he says, pointing through a doorway to another large room, like the one we stood in the day before.
In this one, the tables are laden with guns and ammunition, body armor and weapons of varied levels of technology.
Why not? Doesn't everyone feel the same as you? I ask.
Oh, sure. Of course they do. We all despise the EPO. I mean, just look at the state of this place.
And that's the EPO's fault? I ask.
Chubbs chuckles.
Mate, you haven't got a clue, have you?
He says.
Of course it's the bleeding EPO's fault. Who do you think cuts off our power generators to fuel the tower in high storms? Who manipulates the water flow to ensure the city floods before the tower ever would? We're just blood-sucking leeches to the EPO.
So,
if everyone feels the same, why hide down here? It's them we hide from. The EPO. Not our kind in Central. It's your folk and the patrols they send out, Chubbs explains. Once a day we get scanners over Central, searching for any rebel activity. That's how we ended up here. The iron keeps the scanners out. Can't get through it.
I see, I say, genuinely amazed by their setup and that the EPO scans this place daily. I never knew that happened. I guess there's a lot I don't know about the company I work for. Worked for.
Plus, everyone built on top of these sunken buildings. They don't expect anyone to be down here inside them. They think they're all flooded. We're pretty safe. We enter their dining hall, where I'm served a plate of some sort of brown vegetation. Homegrown goodness, that. Saunders slaps me on the back as he sits next to me with his own plateful. Floodweed. Comes from right here on the riverbed, full of nutrients. Tastes like shit, though, the chef calls from the open kitchen, comically holding his nose while stirring a boiling pan. Not much grows out here anymore, so we make the most of what we can get. When we excavated this place and flushed the water out, we found tons of this stuff growing. It's a Freeva secret. We don't share it with Central. Not enough to go around. I put a forkful into my mouth and instantly regret it. I gag, cough, spit. The Freevas around me crack out laughing. You get used to it, like everything in this place, says Saunders. You like it down here? I ask, having managed to swallow a little. Well, I guess you have to look at the alternatives. I could have carried on working for the EPO, pretending I didn't care about the way they were treating the planet, the way they were controlling Eve. I could have refused to go with this bunch of misfits when they broke me out of my cell at the tower and stayed there to serve my sentence. Or I could live down here with the people who share my beliefs and are willing to fight for them. So yeah, I guess out of those options, this is the one I like best. After breakfast, I'm shown around. It's too much to take in one go. So many rooms. Rooms off other rooms, small ones made into private sleeping quarters, large halls with bunk beds from one end to the other, kitchens, medical facilities, an armory. They have everything they could ever need to be completely self-sufficient. There's enough going on in my mind to keep me busy after they escort me to my room and leave me. It seems that I'm not trusted to wander around unaccompanied yet. I reach out and run my hand down one of the planks of wet wood that is nailed to the walls. A small piece splinters into my finger, sending a jolt of pain through my hand. I'll get that washed out if I were you, Frost says from my doorway. Sorry, I didn't realize you were there, I say as I stand up. No, no, sit, he says as he enters the tiny space and sits down next to me. Splinters are painful little buggers, considering how small they are. I stare at the tiny piece of brown wood protruding from my finger and watch my skin swell and flare around it as my body tries to reject it. It only takes one tiny piece like that to strike the skin at the right time, at the right place, and it can break the surface, penetrate your body's defenses. If you don't eliminate the splinter, it will become infected, and if the infection is aggressive and spreads, you could lose your hand, or your arm, all down to that seemingly insignificant splinter. As I pull it out with my teeth and suck the drop of blood away from the top of my finger, I notice Frost smiling through his grey beard. What? I ask. I think you might just be the splinter we've been waiting for, he says, dropping a file onto the floor beside me. A single photograph slips out and my heart stops. It's grainy, but the image is clear enough for me to recognize it instantly. It's a shot from one of the dome's surveillance cameras of Eve and Holly, and I know immediately that it was me piloting her. It's a photo of our first kiss. Chapter 41. Bram. I hold the printout closer to my eyes, taking in every detail, trying to recall the feeling, the exhilaration of that moment. Holly's lips, my lips, touching Eve's for that briefest of seconds, and in that moment I knew what I was feeling wasn't one-sided. The way she leant in, the way her hands touched me. She wanted me too. My breath catches as I remember the sensation of her body against mine, the microscopic motors of my kinetic suit replicating her curves and the warmth of her skin against the artificial breeze of the drop.
Frost clears his throat and brings me back from above the clouds to the room buried beneath the flooded city.
How the hell did you get this? I ask.
This is beyond classified. Not even us pilots have access to this sort of footage. My mind is ticking, trying to piece together the puzzle.
It's the most watched location ever to have existed on the planet, but the footage is, understandably, heavily guarded.
Let's just say we have friends in high places. Frost smiles beneath his wiry beard.
But that makes no sense. Someone on the inside, secretly working with the Freevers.
Who would risk that? I ask, searching my memory for any clues as to who their inside man could be.
Getting to work with this sort of access takes years. Trust.
It takes sacrifice. Frost interrupts, with a more serious tone.
Sacrifice? I ask.
Frost nods. Leaving their life behind. Saying goodbye to their family. The people they love. Frost's voice wavers, as if he's been caught off guard by his emotions.
He sees me gnosis and coughs it away. Dedicating themselves to the cause. Fighting for their belief for what's right, he grunts.
Leaving behind this for the tower. Who wouldn't volunteer for that job? I say, looking at a trickle of floodwater seeping in through cracks.
Frost snatches the photograph out of my hands.
If this place doesn't live up to your standards, I'm sure a return trip to the tower wouldn't be too difficult to arrange. They've got scanners doing flybys every 30 minutes at surface level, and you're welcome to head up to see your old pals, Frost says, as he stands and fills the doorway, ready to leave.
No, wait, I stop him. I can't go back.
I nod at the photo in his hands and he looks at it for a few moments.
Yeah, well, I guess this isn't really in your job description, he says, pointing his grubby finger at our touching lips.
The boss's kid falls for the savior girl, just like every other hot-blooded male in that place. Brain Dania pants.
It wasn't like that, I snap.
Oh, let me guess. It's different with you two. She really has feelings for you, he says mockingly, making me feel like a stupid kid.
From him, it sounds completely ridiculous.
Oh, please. Do you know how many boys like you we've broken out of that place for that exact reason? Okay, maybe not as highly qualified as you, but still. Since the second she was born, it became every male on planet Earth's fantasy to have her fall madly in love with him. Every one of these guys down here thought the same as you. Half of them still do, no doubt. You don't really think I recruited this many men or built this sort of place because they want to do the right thing? He laughs.
Nope. It's because each and every one of them, even if they don't admit it to themselves, feels like he has a chance of being the one man that the one girl falls crazy in love with.
He shoves the photo back into my hand.
Or at the very least, get a little of this action, you lucky bastard.
Does everyone down here know about it? I ask, wondering how the Freevers will judge just another tower kid who fell for Eve.
Not yet. We have our own levels of classification down here. This came directly from our source to me.
I sigh. That's one positive.
But they'll all find out soon enough, he adds. Your relationship, or whatever you want to call it, could have some use.
Use? I ask.
You want to use me? Everyone down here has a use, kid. If they didn't, they wouldn't still be here, he says.
You don't know Eve like I know her, or like she knows me. I call after him, as he exits my room and disappears into the dark corridor of his headquarters.
I know what I'm saying sounds crazy. It is crazy, completely nuts. This is what every idiot knob thinks when they first start at the tower. Statistically, it's the reason 99% of men sign up to work there, why there are no job vacancies, ever. Once you get a job at the tower, you don't leave until you retire. Or die. Or fall crazy in love with Eve. Get yourself almost killed by security doing your escape and run away with a bunch of Freevers.
Jesus, Bram, what the hell is happening?
I drop my head into my hands trying to clear my racing mind. There's a knock on the door.
Can I come in?
Saunders asks through the cracks.
Sure,
I reply, not even trying to hide my gloom.
Blimey, mate, you okay?
He asks, taking a seat on the floor next to me.
I just had a visit from Frost, I explain.
Oh, I see. Well, he's a tough bastard, but underneath all that beard, there's a good man, you know. He's genuine. not like most of the mindless half-wits down here.
What did he say?
I hand him the photo. If everyone's going to find out, he might as well be the first. He recognizes the dome as fast as I did. When you're a pilot, that place is your home. His jaw drops. He studies the shiny surface of the photo, turning it in the light to see the detail.
You actually kissed her,
he whispers. No, I reply. She kissed me. Silence. Well, you mean she kissed Holly, he says smugly, as if trying to find a hole in my story.
No, she kissed me.
You mean she knew it was you? I nod.
But we met.
I hit him with this bombshell and he stares at me, open-mouthed. Just briefly, but it was enough. She recognized me, somehow. My eyes, I guess.
So they just let you back in with her?
Miss Silver allowed it? He asks, trying to process the impossible photograph in his hands. No, they didn't know what was happening. Well, they sort of did. They just underestimated Eve. They underestimated us.
Us? Us?
Disbelief pours from Saunders's face, perhaps with a little jealousy too.
Did you actually just refer to you and Eve as us?
Bram and Eve?
Breve,
he jokes. I roll my eyes.
This is pretty immense, though.
I know. I take the photo back from him and place it in the pocket of my jumpsuit.
So what's your plan?
Thought you'd get out and run away with this circus, did you? Asks Saunders. I had no choice. My time there is over. I can't be part of that lie. I need to find the truth, and it's definitely not inside the tower.
What truth?
I take a breath to prepare myself. I already know that what I'm about to say will sound crazy. I'm going to find Ernie Warren. Saunders pauses.
Why?
He asks. I have to know the truth. I can't hear any more lies from my father or the EPO, and I can't trust anyone else yet. All I know is that this goes back to Eve's parents. If anyone has answers, it's him. As the words leave my mouth, I see Saunders' lips curl into a smile.
What is it?
I ask. You're going to fit right in here, he laughs. We've been looking for him for years. My heart sinks.
And you've not found him?
Saunders shakes his head. Nope. Too many loose ends. The list of places he could be is endless. Rumor is that they drugged him up so good that he doesn't even know who he is anymore, and the people looking after him don't know who he is. How do you find someone who doesn't even know where they are themselves? Saunders shrugs. What do the Freevers want with Eve's dad? I ask, my question creating a bemused expression on Saunders' face.
Are you kidding? This is Eve's dad we're talking about. This is the guy who single-handedly took on the EPO when the rest of Central was too scared to step even an inch out of line. He made the first crack in the wall of the EPO, and we've been chipping away at it ever since.
Ernie, the first Freever, the original, Saunders salutes. If we ever actually manage to get our soggy hands on Eve, if we ever manage to prize her from the EPO's clenched fist, do you really think she'd want to hear a word any of us had to say? I don't know if he expects a reply. I don't give him one.
Of course not. But she might just listen to the people who reunite her with her father. Then we might have a chance.
So he's your Eve bait? I ask, half in jest, half deadly serious.
Bingo, Saunders winks.
We just gotta catch the guy first. Welcome to the search party, my friend.
Chapter 42. Eve. A loud bang startles me awake. For a second I think someone is breaking into our safe room and my stomach flips with fear. I wonder whether it's friend or foe beyond the thick metal. But no force is used. Instead, the heavy door that sealed us in unlocks with a clunk, swinging gently forwards a few inches, then comes to a natural stop. My surrounding community of women inhale an audible breath as we sit and watch, waiting for someone to leap out from behind it. Seconds pass. The phone blares, making us all jump. I put my hand on my chest and can feel my heart thumping. While Mother Tabia hurries to the phone, Mother Cardi moves to sit next to me on the bed. Her body remains facing the threatening door, as though she's ready to protect me. The thought warms me, even though we both know I have age and fitness on my side. "Mother Tabia," she says, picking up the phone and listening with a look of deep concentration. Within seconds, she places the receiver back in its cradle and nods to us all with a sigh of relief. "We can go," she breathes. "But what about not now?" Mother Tabia warns a mother in one of the upper bunks. I know she was going to ask what happened to Bran to make him no longer a threat. I start to wonder if he's escaped or whether the worst has happened. Not knowing is unbearable. They will tell me more. They have to. I can't be expected to bend to their will while getting nothing in return. Mother Tabia goes to the door, pulling it wide. Even though we've been told there's no danger lurking behind it, I'm still shocked and relieved to see no one on the other side to greet us. We're free to return to our normal lives, as if we haven't been cooped up here with no real explanation as to why. The women around me chatter as they make the beds we've been lying on, wash the crockery and sweep the floor, reverting it to the state we found it in. I get to my feet and head for the door, but before I walk through it, I stop and look back, taking in the sight of the women who've looked after me my whole life. The women who've cared for me, clothed me, taught me how to double pirouette or speak Mandarin badly, and shown me what it is to be a compassionate human. They've already sacrificed so much in the employ of a woman who doesn't care for them at all. They are nothing to her, but they are so much to me. I owe who I am to them, and I don't want to be blind like her. "You've not gone unnoticed. I see all you do," I say, my voice rising above their chatter until I've got their full attention. "Whatever it was that brought you here to be with me, I want you to know I'm grateful it did. There's so much I've yet to learn, but one thing I'm clear of is how I feel about each of you. I've recently been doubting the sort of mother I'm going to be, but if I follow the example of the women who raised me, I know I'll be a good one. A mother who is willing to sacrifice herself and do all she can to protect and provide for her children. Thank you." "Thank you," Mother Cardi says, with a big smile. "I wouldn't have had it any other way," chips in Mother Kimberly. "Nor me," croaks Mother Caroline. "It's been the best years of my life, and I've had a long one." "Steady on," I laugh. "It's true," shouts someone from the back of the room. But before I can identify her, the other women are adding their own words of encouragement or joy at being here with me. It's a strange feeling to have such love expressed to me, but I welcome it. I need it. I look to Mother Tabia, the only one to stay silent. For a second, I think she's going to say something crushing, but instead, she smiles. It's enough. As I walk back to my room and straight into my bathroom, I feel empowered. I meant what I said to them. They've given me so much, and I'll always be grateful. But the future is mine to write. Suddenly, the responsibility of being the one to prolong the existence of humanity doesn't seem so daunting. Not when I have the mother's support. I stay there, looking at my reflection in the mirror and noticing the fire behind my eyes. This could be a fleeting moment of buoyancy, but I embrace it. Before long, I hear the door close in my bedroom and become aware of the silence that is left behind. I'm alone. I walk out of the bathroom and take a breath, then go straight for my mother's book of letters. Its pages have become well-thumbed in the short while I've had it. I don't think she'd have minded that, though. Her words have brought me closer to her, even if they've not helped me answer any of the questions I've unearthed. As I flick through the pages to read my favourite passage once more, the one in which she lists all the things she's looking forward to us doing when I arrive in the world, my eyes are drawn to something new, a page I've not seen before. "Darling girl, I fear I'm losing you before you even arrive. Your father thinks I'm being foolish, but I think my maternal intuition has seeped in early. They're creating a safe place for you, a tower where you can spend your days in a loving environment and know nothing but good. This makes me happy. I want you to see the good that life has to offer. Because already the promise of your arrival has brought about so much change. But their scope is so vast. The plan so complex and intricate. I fear my love won't be enough to keep you with me. They can offer you so much. Even a garden to call your own, so that you never have to leave. Vivian is still being incredibly sweet and supportive, so maybe I'm panicking over nothing. It's not hard to see I'm buckling under the pressure here. There's so much to take in and prepare for. I've always wanted to be a mother, but being the mother to the first girl born in 50 years has added so much strain. I feel judged already, with people wondering whether I'm going to do right by you and for them. I could just be being paranoid, of course. Pregnancy hormones will do that to a woman. Be warned. I know how loved you are and can see you will have the best life ever lived. But, my little one, what if I'm not enough? They'll take you. They'll take you and bring you up their way so that you will become who they want you to be. There I go again. You are loved. You are yours. Not mine. Not theirs. Remember that. Love, your mama. Kiss, kiss, kiss. I read the note a few times to be absolutely certain of its authenticity. Of course I am. These are my mother's words, intended for me to read. Although they'd been stripped out of the book I was given, which was evidently an altered version of my mother's reality, manipulated to keep me on their chosen path. To let me think this is what she wanted for me, but, like me, she had serious doubts. I only wish she hadn't doubted herself so much. I know she would have been a fantastic mother to me. Glancing back at her words, I wonder who snuck this between the pages I've come to know so well. It wasn't in there earlier, so either it happened before we were ushered into the safe room, or while we were there, or when we came out and I was in my bathroom. Whichever, someone has decided to make the most of the commotion downstairs and sneak this to me. I wonder how many more entries were edited out or stripped of my mother's intention. I look out of the window in my room at the beauty of the garden zone below. The tower they built for me and brought me up in, because my mother wasn't around to do things her way. If only Vivian hadn't lost the ability to connect with me like she used to. A thought occurs to me. Surely not. Could it all be a lie? I need to find out now, before it's too late.
Chapter 43. Bram. I swallow a mouthful of floodweed. It comes straight back up, but I force it down again. I'm trying not to show any sign of weakness.
Looks like you're getting used to it,
Chubbs laughs, noticing my wince while slurping his third helping. I take my empty tin, rinse it in the large iron bowl they call a sink, and place it with the rest of the pile, ready for the next meal. It's not home, but I'm starting to see how things work down here. Everyone has their place. Frost is their leader, a man as harsh as the world he lives in. Saunders, ex-EPO. His knowledge is invaluable. Chubbs, Johnny, Nix, and many more names I'm yet to commit to memory make up Frost's army, the Freevers. I take a moment to scan the room, watching the 10 or so Freevers eat, whispering secrets, sharing information. Eve's name is audible every few seconds and catches my ear like someone calling my own name. Bram? A woman's voice startles me.
Yeah, sorry. Helena, isn't it? I was just daydreaming.
Don't blame you. Any chance you get to be somewhere other than this is worth slipping away for, she says, tapping the side of her creased, freckled head. She lifts the toughened plastic container that's overflowing with at least 100 used tins and mugs. I see the veins in her arms pulse as she relocates it to the other side of the room they're using as a kitchen. She's physically strong for someone in her early 70s.
Ain't you ever seen a woman lift?
She jokes, flexing her biceps before leaving the room. I follow her out, heading back to what has become my room for the foreseeable future. As I navigate the seemingly endless corridors, avoiding the drips of floodwater falling from the ceiling at each intersection, I realize I've taken a wrong turn.
Hello,
I call. My voice is dead in the heavy air. Shit. This is all I need. Such a noob.
Hey,
a small voice says. I turn on the spot to find a head poking out of a doorway about 10 meters ahead of me.
Oh, it's you, the pilot,
he says, lifting the tinted goggles from his eyes. Hi, Johnny. My heart sinks. He's the youngest person in the deep, one of the youngest on the planet, even. My guess is that he's around 14, and he's not left me alone since I arrived, like some sort of Eve fanboy, obsessed with hearing every bit of info, every detail on Eve, Holly, and my father's inventions.
You lost?
He asks. No use hiding it, and it's better bumping into Johnny than Frost. I nod.
Come in. You can help me, actually.
His head suddenly disappears inside the room and the door stays open, waiting for me to follow. I sigh and walk in. My eyes narrow and I raise my hand to shield them from the light as I enter.
Oh, sorry, he mumbles. Here, use these.
He shoves at me a pair of tinted goggles, like the one he's wearing, and I place them over my eyes before the light melts my retinas.
Better?
He asks. I nod as the light is blocked, and I can finally see where I am. My heart stops. Standing there in front of me.
Eve,
I whisper, ripping off the goggles.
Put them back on,
Johnny shouts as I'm blinded again by the intense white light. I snap them over my head and blink. Eve reappears. It's her, standing in the center of the room, staring at the wall.
She's not real, you idiot. I thought you, of all people, would be able to spot a hologram when you see one.
Suddenly, I see the light throws from the holo projectors rigged up to the corners of the room.
But how are you doing this?
I stutter, more at seeing the perfection of Eve's face again than anything else.
Don't you recognize your own father's invention?
Johnny says, picking up the illuminated keypad from the floor. He types a few things in and Eve suddenly turns to me.
Hello, Bram. I've missed you.
She winks.
Stop, I say, placing my hand over Johnny's to stop him typing.
Okay, okay.
I step to the corner of the room and take a close look at the small projectors blasting Eve's image into Johnny's damp room in the deep. I read, Wells Innovations, embossed on the side of the matte black outer casing.
How did you get this?
I ask. He turns to me.
These? Oh, they're everywhere in Central, just standard holoprojectors.
I stare back at him and wait. That's a lie, and he knows I know it is. Of course, there are holo projectors inside and outside every building in Central. There have been for years, installed as part of my father's projectant program, with the intention of using them to allow projectants to walk freely among society. When his program was scrapped, the projectors remained, taking on a new role, throwing advertisements and EPO propaganda into the streets, projecting the latest model boats and floating homes onto the river. But these were not standard holo projectors. Okay, Johnny smiles. I knew you'd spot it. He's referring to the small letter H embossed after Wells Innovations. Holly. Those are my projectors, I say. They're only used in one place. The dome. Johnny raises his eyebrows.
How did you...
Some good men gave their lives to get these, he says, his expression suddenly changing. Oh, I'm sorry. I place my hand on his shoulder.
That's okay. It's what we sign up for, he shrugs. I just got to get this damn thing to work.
I glance at Eve, now standing as though she's in a moment of deep thought. Then I glance around Johnny's room. Wires, circuit boards, screens, computers, keyboards. His role down here is pretty obvious.
What the hell are you planning to use this for anyway? I ask, trying to choose from the endless possibilities.
Well, that's classified, he smirks.
But between you and me, let's just say that if Eve ever made it outside that place, a decoy might not be the worst idea in the world.
He winks. I nod, lifting my goggles slightly and squinting at the mess of light splashing around the small room. Well, she's far from perfect at the moment, I chuckle.
You think you could help?
He can't contain the hopeful grin on his face. If anyone's going to be able to get this working, it's you. Of all the definitive moments in the last few days, of all the life-changing decisions I've made, this feels top of the list. The ultimate betrayal of my father. My heart leaps at the idea of helping the Freevers to use his own tech against him. Yeah, I'll help, I say, taking a seat on the floor next to him. But I warn you, I'm not my father. From what I hear, that's probably a good thing, Johnny says. But you must have learnt a thing or two from working with him all these years.
With? I chuckle.
No one works with Dr. Wells. You work for him.
Geez, and I thought I had it bad, Johnny replies.
What do you mean? I ask, not understanding his remark.
Frost. Dad. My dad,
Johnny explains.
Frost is your father,
I say, maybe a little too shocked.
Yeah, the apple fell a long way from the tree, all right,
he laughs, much to Dad's disappointment.
I spend the next few hours sharing my limited knowledge of holography with Johnny. He laps up every word, fills in the blanks. By the time we remove our goggles, the blinding lights have been tamed, the exposure corrected, the focus calibrated, and standing before us is a perfect replication of Eve.
Blimey,
Johnny sighs at her beauty. You should see the real thing, I reply.
With you on our side, maybe I will,
he smiles. He might just be right.
Chapter 44 Bram.
Rise and shine, young Bram, she rasps through the thin crack of my door. My tired mind takes a few moments to remember her name. Morning, Helena, I yawn.
Actually, it's afternoon, she replies, stepping in and handing me a tin mug.
The hours pass quicker in the deep. Sunlight barely breaks the storm clouds, let alone reaches the catacombs of this Freeva hive far below the rivers of Central. It's impossible to tell where day ends and night begins down here, I say, sipping the water, using my lips to filter the few petals they add for flavour. Day, night, doesn't matter here, my boy. Someone's always awake and someone's always asleep, she says, rapping her fist on the wall dividing me from the next room, where Chubbs is undoubtedly still snoozing.
I'm up,
his muffled voice moans. I like Helena. She's made my time in the deep a little easier. Her quick mind and sharp tongue putting me in my place, and others too. They all respect her here.
On your feet then, tower boy. Frost doesn't like to be kept waiting, she says, watching me as I stand and pull my damp jumpsuit up over my naked torso. Getting a good look? I tease.
Cheeky bugger. I'm old enough to be a grandmother, she jokes, picking up my mug, finishing my water and disappearing into the hall. I drop to the floor and start my new ritual of 100 push-ups. Being down here makes you feel unfit, out of shape. I can't afford to be either of those. I feel the oxygen flooding my muscles and the adrenaline waking my senses. I need to be alert if I'm being summoned by Frost. 1, 2, 3, 4. Frost. Chubbs. Helena. Saunders. I start listing the names, trying to remember the new family I've fallen into. Quite literally, in some cases. There are entire families living down here. Fathers, mothers and sons, all united in the fight to free Eve from the clutches of the EPO.
Bram,
Johnny whispers through my door.
Come in,
I grunt as I push up. The door opens and in he comes, his goggles dangling around his neck.
Hi, it's Frost. He sent me to get you.
Jeez, must be fairly urgent. Helena's only just left. Johnny widens his eyes. It's about me and Eve, right? I ask, already guessing. He nods.
Did you actually kiss?
He runs his hands through his hair in excited anticipation of my reply.
Yes and no. It's complicated,
I say, standing up and squeezing past him through the door.
So, like, your lips actually... I can't even... How did you...
Okay, chill, Johnny, chill. There's a lot more to it, I say, trying to speed up our walk. I already hear the crowd in the main chamber, the largest one. It's where they hold all their meetings. I turn the corner and Helena's figure fills the open doorway.
Good luck,
she whispers, giving me a little pat on my butt as Johnny and I pass her to enter the lion's den. She follows us as we walk into the long, dimly lit hall, every head turning in our direction. The room falls silent. All eyes are on me. Now I see why. A small, old-fashioned projector sits on the central table, casting its light towards the largest wall. The beam is interrupted by a jet of fine mist, pouring from a pipe in the ceiling. The projection on the mist acts like a makeshift hologram, showing everyone in the room the photograph sitting on top of the projector. The photo of the kiss. Our kiss. The reaction is mixed. Some of the Freevers spit on the ground at my feet. Others laugh and give me congratulatory nudges in jest. I see the scattering of women gather around Helena. She continues to walk behind me as she hears whisper after whisper. I glance back for some reassurance as she waves them away like annoying flies buzzing around her head and nods for me to keep moving.
Calm yourselves, please. Frost calls the rabble to order. Obviously you've seen we have breaking news, fresh from the dome, about our guest of honour and newest recruit, Mr. Bram Wells. The room half applauds.
I don't know how to react. This is weird. Awkward. I stare at the floor, try not to make eye contact with anyone around me. I sense the trust I've been trying to build hanging by a thread. As I do my best not to look at anyone, I find myself facing a scattering of photographs on the long table in front of me while Frost addresses the crowd. Leaked EPO images, Helena whispers from behind, sensing my interest. What are you looking for? I mutter back. Our voice is lost under the constant Freeva babble. Ernie Warren, she replies. Eve's father. I raise my eyebrows in response, looking at the haystack of images for a needle that might not even exist. I scan the photographs, from dilapidated cloud scrapers to family photos of EPO personnel outside their homes. How have the Freevers got their hands on these? Suddenly, something catches my eye. A small speck of colour on the corner of a photograph sticks out from underneath the pile. I recognise the deep green of the few leaves visible at this edge of the picture. While the noisy room surrounding me is preoccupied with Frost's speech, I lean forward casually and subtly slip the photo out so I can see the whole thing. My heart is racing as I stare at the photo. The one I've had as the home screen of my holo display since I was a boy. The large, beautiful tree. Suddenly, an impossible thought streaks across my mind, like a news flash. Why else would my dad have had that exact photo in his office all those years ago? This place has to be significant. I run my hands across the photo, as if my fingers are touching the leaves, and I stop them at the bottom, at the thing that has been staring at me in the face my whole life. This isn't a photo of a tree at all. It's a photo of the building behind it. My youthful mind was blinded by nature's beauty, disguising the small brick building in the background. It's been there all this time, sitting at the end of the gravel driveway, sheltered from the sun by the gracious tree. My father is not a sentimental man. He has no family portraits or photos of his past. Everything has a purpose. Everything has a use. My father would only have had this photo for a specific reason, and if he was in on some cover-up, if he was part of Ernie's disappearance. My brain is spinning. I suddenly realize that I know more than any of the men in the room. I know where Eve's father is.
So, Mr. Wells, says Frost.
It's just Bram.
Very well, Bram.
I'm not down here to join you, I say to them all as I stare into Frost's eyes. My heart pounds. I've not thought any of this through, but somehow I know it's right.
Oh, really? Frost says, digging his dirty fingers into the arm of his chair. I'm here to lead you.
Chapter 45. Eve. Eve, I hear, while a hand gently shakes me awake. I stir, feeling groggy. My head seems heavy as I lift it. Mother Cardi is gazing down at me with a concerned look on her face. We need to go to the doctor. For retraction, she adds, with a sad smile. It comforts me. That face. That compassion for the situation I'm in purely because I was born. I've barely slept. I felt so energized last night that I simply couldn't sleep. The black of night seemed to go on forever as I watched it linger from my sofa. I must have dozed off at some point and my body aches because I didn't get into bed. Come on. Let's get you ready, Mother Cardi says softly. Will you stay with me? I ask. Retraction is nothing new, I know that, but this is different. This time I'm saying goodbye to my eggs, knowing they may find their way back to me. and that's a good thing, she says, encouragingly. Obviously,